Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei says Lieutenant General Soleimani, who was assassinated by the U.S. 2 years ago, is a symbol of hope and perseverance in the region. Millions of Iraqis mark the anniversary of the U.S. assassination of anti-terror icons General Soleimani and al-Mohandas. Demonstrators demand all U.S. forces leave Iraq. And Ukraine says one of its soldiers is killed in fighting with pro-Russian fighters in the country's rest of peace. Hello and welcome. You've tuned into World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated by the U.S. in 2020, has turned into a role model and a hero for the younger generation. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said the enemies were under the delusion that with the martyrdom of General Soleimani, quote, they would be done with their job. However, the U.S. fled Afghanistan as a result of the sacrifices made by Soleimani. Ayatollah Khamenei also said Washington is inevitably pulling out of Iraq and only has an advisory role there without any military presence. Iran's leader warned Iraqi officials to be vigilant about the issue. Ayatollah Khamenei added the resistance front in Yemen is making gains while the enemy has been brought to its knees in Syria. The leader made the comments in a meeting with Soleimani's family and members of a commission set up to honor him. The director of Rasalat Strategic Studies Institute, Sam Mahdi Torabi, says Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani symbolizes unity and resistance against injustice.
He was the sum and summary of the real Islam, which is the Islam that does not accept being oppressed and which doesn't oppress itself, which fights sincerely and with honesty not to seek becoming a member of the Wall Street or some board after retiring from public service in order to make profit from public service, which is exactly the way things are in the West now. There was a time when even in the West, people would not profit from their public service, something that General Marshall wrote about when he was asked to write his memoir. And he declined to do it because he said he didn't want to profit privately from public service. That is dead. That does not exist anywhere in the world anymore except for in the school of Islam, of real Islam, and in the school of Imam Khomeini.
Well, thousands of Iranian women have gathered in the capital, Tehran, in commemoration of the country's top anti-terror icon and military commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Soleimani was assassinated along with the senior commander of Iraq's Popular Mobilization Forces in a U.S. drone strike in Baghdad in 2020. Yusuf Jalali brings us more.
12,000 seats, but 12,000 plus women thronged into the stadium with all chanting one slogan, "We're all Qasem Soleimani." 2 years have passed since the top Iranian military commander was assassinated by the U.S., and yet Iranians do not cease to keep his memory alive. Days ahead of the second anniversary of Soleimani's assassination, these Iranian women gather to pay tribute to him.
To us, General Soleimani was like a father who made our country a safe place in an oasis of chaos and terrorism. Now that he's gone, we all feel to be orphaned.
Soleimani was commander who did not allow the terrorists to approach our borders. He defeated Daesh in Iraq and Syria, so the entire region always owes him a big thank.
General Soleimani was the commander of the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. He, together with commander of Iraq's popular mobilization units, Abu Mahdi al-Mohandas, was assassinated in 2020 in a U.S. air raid outside Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from then-U.S. President Donald Trump. These people demand that the Iranian government bring the perpetrators to justice.
The message of our gathering today is that we strongly urge our authorities to punish those who committed this crime. The former U.S. president must be held accountable. American politicians thought that by killing General Soleimani, they would be able to let the terrorists win, but we are all going to preserve his legacy.
General Soleimani is well known for his role in dislodging Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017. He also spearheaded major operations in Syria that led to the recapturing of key areas from Daesh. This made him rise to fame in the region and beyond as the nemesis of terrorists. In 2020, millions of people in Iraq and Iran took part in his funeral ceremony to bid him farewell. Iran is planning mass ceremonies on General Soleimani's second assassination anniversary on January the 3rd.
Calling themselves the daughters of General Soleimani, these ladies say this gathering sends the message that Soleimani was not just an influential military commander, but a popular public figure whose character continues to inspire more Iranians who feel bound to preserve what he stood for. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Meanwhile, Iraqis are on the streets of the capital, Baghdad, to honor top Iranian General Qasem Soleimani and senior Iraqi commander Abu Mahdi al-Mohandes, both assassinated by the U.S. 2 years ago. Well, Iraqi demonstrators are calling for the withdrawal of American forces from their country. They've been demanding that ever since Soleimani and al-Mohandes lost their lives in a U.S. drone strike near Baghdad on January the 3rd, 2020. Both men were leading anti-terror figures who played a great role in defeating Daesh in Iraq. Amid the expulsion calls there, the U.S. last year ended its combat mission in Iraq and limited to an advisory role. Well, for Iran, 2021 was a year of transitions in both politics and foreign policy. The country also witnessed a deadly outbreak of the coronavirus pandemic. This report takes a closer look at some of the major occurrences in Iran during the past year.
In 2021 saw a new administration take office in Iran, and new rounds of negotiations to revive the 2015 deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. Iran also witnessed the breakout of the novel coronavirus in 2021, and the belated vaccination rollout, using both domestically produced and imported vaccines, dramatically reduced the fatalities by the year's end. We are going to take a closer look at the major events that took place in Iran in 2021. The signatories to the 2015 agreement, which called for the removal of sanctions on Iran in exchange for some nuclear curbs, came together in April to revive the accord. The United States was, of course, not directly taking part in the talks, with Iran as it unilaterally withdrew from the agreement in 2018. The negotiations started during the last year of former Iranian president Hassan Rouhani's administration. This came after the new administration in the White House publicly announced Washington's readiness to rejoin the JCPOA if Iran returned to full compliance with the deal. And there was the core of disagreement between the two sides. After the US withdrawal, Iran waited for a full year to see how the European sides will make amends for Washington's move. But after seeing no sign of meaningful action, Tehran started to gradually roll back on its commitments under the deal. Iran said it was entitled to do so as per the terms of the agreement itself. For Iran, it was obvious that the ball was in the US courts. Washington, however, insisted that it was in Iran's. The sixth round of talks in Vienna failed to yield an agreement to revive the deal. The talks eventually came to a grind in March ahead of Iran's presidential election. Iranians went to the polls in June and elected Ebrahim Raisi as their next president. The former head of the judiciary won a landslide victory with 62% of the votes, raking in 18 million out of the 28 million ballots cast. In his first press conference, Raisi had this to say about the prospect of a meeting with the US president under his watch. Raisi also said Iran would prioritize relations with its neighbors. Soon after he took office, Tehran joined the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which could significantly boost Iran's trade ties with Russia, China, and other members of the bloc. Back in March, Iran signed a 25-year strategic partnership with China which would see Beijing investing up to $400 billion in the country's economy. Iran's new foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, also chose Damascus for his first bilateral foreign visit. The trip meant that Iran would put its partners first. Tehran continued its support for its allies, including resistance groups in Palestine, as well as Lebanon's Hezbollah and Yemen's Ansarullah. With the new administration in charge, Iran also saw a dramatic boost to its vaccination campaign in 2021. Iran's COVID-related fatalities and cases hit new highs in August as the country reported a record daily toll of more than 700 to become the worst-hit nation in West Asia. Under its new administration, Iran began importing huge amounts of foreign vaccines while introducing its own homegrown jabs. This was achieved in the face of tough U.S. sanctions.
Moving on to other news this hour. Nearly 360 Palestinians, many of them women and children, have been reportedly killed in 2021 at the hands of the Israeli regime amid silence of the international community. A report conducted by the National Assembly of the Families of the Martyrs of Palestine says nearly 20% of those killed were women. That number has been unprecedented since the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian land took place in 1948. The report also says 22% of those martyred were children. It argues that the silence of the international community has encouraged Tel Aviv to commit such crimes against Palestinians. It has also called on the Palestinian Justice Ministry and other organizations to pursue a legal prosecution against the Israeli regime in international courts. The UN says the Sana'a airport in Yemen is critical for aid operations, expressing concern over further disruptions by forces loyal to former President Abdurrahman Mansour Hadi. The UN humanitarian coordinator for Yemen is urging Saudi-backed forces to allow the entry of communications equipment to the airport. David Gersley says the equipment is needed for the continuation of the aid operation in Yemen. He, however, noted that Saudi-led coalition has not authorized a transfer despite several requests from the UN. Flights into the capital have been largely halted by a Saudi-led blockade since August of 2016. The airport was also closed for several days in December of last year following Saudi airstrikes. Well, a human rights advocacy group in Yemen has released the statistics of crimes committed by the Saudi-led war on the impoverished country during 2021. Now, the report sheds light on civilian casualties of Saudi airstrikes across Yemen. Our correspondent in Sana'a, Abdulatif Awashali, reports.
This conference in the capital Sana'a, Yemen's Eye for Humanity Center for Rights and Development, released its new report on the Saudi crimes committed against Yemenis during 2021. The report highlights the number of victims of the Saudi air attacks and the destruction of the country's infrastructure.
Recently, the Saudi-led coalition has escalated its raids against civilian facilities and residential areas crowded with civilians in Yemen and tried to justify this by saying that there were military activities in those areas, which was not true. We monitor all the crimes of the Saudi-led coalition and the victims who fall in Saudi airstrikes and mortar shelling.
The report says Saudi warplanes have launched over 9,900 airstrikes against civilian facilities across Yemen last year, killing 387 civilians, including 96 children, and injuring hundreds more.
Last year was a bloody year in which the coalition committed the most heinous crimes and killed hundreds of innocent civilians, including children. In the new year, the United Nations is expected to continue its strategy and remain silent in the face of these atrocities. This is because of the financial support that the world body receives from the countries of the coalition.
In a previous report, the human rights group said more than 43,000 civilians had been hurt or killed in relentless airstrikes across Yemen since Saudi Arabia launched a war on its southern neighbor in 2015. It said nearly 4,000 children were among those killed.
As people around the world celebrate the New Year with festivals and joyful events, Yemenis enter a New Year of war and siege imposed on their country by Saudi Arabia. People here believe that the years-long resistance will eventually bring Riyadh to justice for its crimes in Yemen. Abdulatif Washali, Sana.
Ukraine says one of its soldiers has been killed in fighting with pro-Russia forces. This amid growing concerns over a military confrontation between Moscow and the West. The Ukrainian army says pro-Russia forces launched three attacks within 24 hours using grenade launchers and small arms. Now, this is the first step since a truce was brokered in late December between Moscow and Kiev to end hostilities in Ukraine's east. Kiev and its Western allies accused Moscow of preparing an attack against Ukraine by massing tens of thousands of troops near its borders. Russia denies that, saying the buildup is in response to NATO's expansion towards its borders. Moscow is concerned about the West's arms supplies to Ukraine, which seeks to join NATO. Well, Tunisia launches a national consultation campaign that will feed into drafting a new constitution. The consultation, dubbed Your Opinion, Our Decision, is initially targeting youth centers through an electronic platform. Citizens will also be able to express their views in local committees. Topics include electoral, economic, financial, social, and cultural affairs. The national consultation campaign will last until March the 20th. This is part of a reform package pushed by President Kais Saied. Tunisia's constitutional referendum is planned for July 25th. That's exactly a year after the president sacked the government, suspended parliament, and seized wide-ranging powers. Well, coronavirus is abating in Iran as the country reports record-breaking lows of daily infections and related deaths. Health officials say 33 Iranians died of COVID in the past day. That's a record low since March 2020. Almost 1,000 new cases were also registered in the past day, the lowest since May of last year. Well, the fall in new infections and deaths has been attributed to the intense nationwide vaccination drive. Roughly 60 million people have received the first jab, and nearly 52 million are fully vaccinated. The Ministry of Health says 120 million vaccines have been administered across Iran. That's enough to have vaccinated over 70% of the country's population. And with that brings us to the end of this World News edition. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Thank you. This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, the position of the spouses. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the position of the spouses in the Islamic lifestyle. We are talking about the family and its members, and we want to discuss about the position of the spouses. Well, the very first position of the spouses, the husband and wife, is that they should believe that they are from each other. They are just like each other. The way Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said in the chapter Nahl, verse number 72, وَجَعَلَ لَكُم مِّنْ أَنفُسِكُمْ أَزْوَاجًا. We have made for you from yourselves spouses. So when we talk about ourselves, when I'm talking about my wife, for example, or my wife is talking about myself, we should believe that we are from each other. We are one. We are not two. We apparently may look two different people, but we are one. And this oneness that we have, it's been given from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to us. Allah made us spouses, and He wants us to be one in our wordings, in our actions, in when we are in front of others, so that when others look at us, they don't see any difference in us. Yes, we might have some differences, but that's when we both are alone and talking to each other, not to discuss our matters in front of others. Because if we discuss our matters in front of others, then obviously they will see that these are two, in reality, they are two different identities. They are two different people. But when we discuss our main issues within ourselves, privately and in a room where no one can listen to us, where no one can have attention towards our issues, then obviously from outside, whoever will look at us, they will look at us as one, being one entity, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the position of the spouses, and we said that the spouses are, they look as two different people, but they are one in reality. And this is what they should think, because according to the Islamic teachings, the spouses, husband and wife, is one reality. It's one reality. Yes, for the husband and wife or the spouses, the other relatives, they are others. They are other than them. But for a husband, the wife is just like him. For the wife, the husband is just like her. So when we talk about the system of the family and the relation and the position of the spouses, they should look at each other as they are their own selves. And in the Quran also we have that Hunna libasun lakum wa antum libasun lakum. It is just like a clothing, that your wives are like clothes that you put, and these clothes are covering you, and for your wives, you're the clothes for them. So it's the two way, that the way the clothes, they cover the faults and the faults that I have, the same way I should cover the faults of my wife, and wife should cover the faults of the husband. And if there are some deficiencies in the life, if there are some problems, they should solve by themselves and by having love and mercy upon each other, inshallah. And this is the key of success in the family relation or the relation of husband and wife, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you. Thanks for listening to A2Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
Africa witnessed another year that was eventful and full of challenges. The continent saw a return of coups and increased political instability. People in the continent are also resisting Western neocolonial powers as they seek to assert their freedom. There was also renewed hope in economic progress and technological advancement. The COVID-19 pandemic dominated the headlines throughout Africa in the year, and as the year ended, a new variant, Omicron, was detected in Southern Africa. Now, addressing the UN General Assembly in September, South African President had warned that vaccine apartheid imposed by Western countries would lead to mutations of the virus.
It is an indictment on humanity that more than 82% of the world's vaccine doses have been acquired by wealthy countries, while less than 1% has gone to low-income countries. Unless we address this as a matter of urgency, the pandemic will last much longer and new mutations of the virus will emerge and spread.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a warm welcome to Africa Today, a weekly program that gives you an alternative view of events making headlines in Africa. Today we are focusing on some of the events that made headlines in Africa in 2021. So stay tuned as we discuss with our experts.
COVID-19 vaccine apartheid. Africa is ending another challenging year. The COVID-19 pandemic continued to spread amid discovery of new variants. Vaccine deliveries to the continent have been erratic, causing delays in vaccination drives
as calls intensified for equity. Meanwhile, many vaccines donated by Western countries have been of no help, as many were delivered or literally dumped in Africa while they were about to expire. The World Health Organization Director General has lamented that the world has reached a situation of vaccine apartheid.
The world is in vaccine apartheid. As you know, high-income countries account for 15% of the world's population, but have 45% of the world's vaccines. Even now, some high-income countries are moving to vaccinate children and adolescents, while health workers, older people, and other at-risk groups around the world remain unvaccinated. The consequences are clear to see. Cases and deaths from COVID-19 globally remain at or near record highs, and new variants threaten to unravel the gains we have made. The big problem is a lack of sharing. So the solution is more sharing.
Now, for more on some of the events that made headlines in Africa, my colleague contacted Lloyd Msipa, director, Africa Brief Foundation, and Joseph Uchieno, writer and African affairs analyst. Now, we first asked Mr. Msipa how the vaccine apartheid imposed by major Western pharmaceuticals impacted on efforts to vaccinate people in Africa.
Well, to begin with, this whole coronavirus epidemic kept quite a lot of African countries flat-footed, in the sense that half the time, if the leaders got sick or those with money got sick, they'll leave the country and go somewhere else. But then this COVID thing has been universal, in the sense that it affected each and every country, forcing African countries to look internally into their own health system. But then again, you find that those who control the copyright of these medicines, the vaccines, are Western countries, and they have not and they've refused to release them to African countries, which, by the way, have the capacity to manufacture their own vaccines, but that's just they don't have the legal standing. So because of this, you know, Africans are pretty much in trouble. They have to rely on the West to sell them these medicines. And you know what the West has done? They've pretty much bought the medicines enough for themselves, leaving the other African countries to suffer.
Now, amid the vaccine apartheid, Rwandan President Paul Kagame says Africa needs to start manufacturing its own vaccines and other pharmaceutical products.
In line with our agenda of increasing domestic health financing, it is important for Africa to forge strategic public-private partnerships for vaccine manufacturing on our continent.
Now, Mr. Uchieno says apartheid perpetrated by Western countries has led to an awakening among African scientists.
It has been extremely frustrating for most of African countries. But I think also one of the things that this has shown is to wake up African scientists, industry and government, and indeed most of the African people who observe these issues, that indeed appetite in Africa versus the West has not ended, and that it is real in economics, real in politics, and on this occasion, real in medicine. To the extent that many African countries, particularly the first wave, wanted to vaccinate, but they could not, in many cases, be able to get the vaccines, even those with money. It was extraordinary.
The most significant positive outcome of COVID-19 in the region has been the acceleration of innovation in Africa. An electronics manufacturing manager at an innovation lab in Nairobi that works on the surface mount technology for entrepreneurs and artisans says that such projects will create opportunity for growth.
We see ourselves as a factory of factories. So we'd be really, really, really happy if 10 years from now there are hundreds or even thousands of factories that have emanated from ideas that were crystallized in our space.
Do such projects in Kenya point to a reawakening amongst African scientists?
You know, I think there are two elements to that question. As I suggested in my first response to you, in a way, Africans have woken up And indeed, in a way, Africans have woken up to the reality that they will not necessarily depend on Western or indeed any other technology for their own advancements and in many cases for their health and for the protection of their lives. So there is huge potential right now in African pharmaceutical industries, almost very small, African research and sciences to be able to develop. And in fact, in many cases, huge innovations did take place. In my own native Uganda, there was a case for a medication that was never approved. But amazingly, as I understand it, you know, perhaps if it went to the global rigor, it might just about get improved. But thanks, unfortunately, to the massive amount of the monies that Western pharmaceuticals throw as part of the lobby monies, that may not see the end of the day. But on the other hand, I think actually, sadly, on the negative side, I don't know that in Africa we'd necessarily learn, because we don't learn very much. Because if we did, this would be a huge opportunity for governments to invest in research more, for governments to invest in research, for governments to encourage, to double incentives and bursaries to study sciences.
Sudan crisis.
Moving on to politics, Sudan has witnessed a tumultuous year and the future still looks uncertain. The country's military takeover on the 25th of October and the arrest of Prime Minister Hamdok triggered widespread protests and condemnation across the country.
Nearly 50 people have so far been killed and hundreds have been injured as a result of a clampdown by security forces. Even after a political agreement was signed in November, enabling Hamdok to be reinstated as Prime Minister, thousands of people continue to hold protests in the capital Khartoum and other cities to demand return to full civilian rule. A protester here says they have very clear demands.
All I'm saying is the revolution never actually ended. It's continuing and we will continue until we achieve all of our goals. We don't want the military to be the head of state anymore. We want civilian government. We want justice for all the wounded, all the martyred, our friends, brothers and sisters and sons. We want justice for all of them.
Ethiopian conflict.
The conflict in Ethiopia continued to dominate headlines across the year. The country's 13-month insurgency recently saw a dramatic turn following substantial advances by federal government forces against TPLF rebels from the northern Tigray region. And as the year ended, the Tigrayan rebels announced withdrawal from neighboring regions and a halt of their march towards the capital Addis Ababa.
Many Ethiopians have blamed Western countries, especially the United States, and their media outlets of supporting rebel groups in the country. Here is one Ethiopian slamming Washington's interference in his country during a protest outside the U.S. Embassy in Pretoria, South Africa.
Yes, it is very critical. It's an issue of the country. And we don't need America to interfere in Ethiopia's issue. Actually, we don't need any support. America must stay away. USA must stay away from the issue of Ethiopia. Because of them, we are suffering now. Our country is getting finished. People are dying, and our economy is getting finished. Therefore, it's because of America. America must stop. America must...
Now, we asked Ms. Msipa to tell us the possible objectives pursued by Western neocolonial powers fomenting turmoil in Ethiopia.
They desire control. So what they do is they fund the opposition, they fund rebel groups, and at the same time they offer them media space. It's unfortunate that Africa does not have its own 24-hour news outlet like the CNN, the BBCs of this world to counter this propaganda. So what then happens is that most of the news that are received worldwide and Ethiopia itself is news that is manufactured in America and manufactured in Britain and other Western countries in an attempt to destabilize a government that is elected in Ethiopia. So it's all about control. It's all about resources as well, because those rebel groups, for them to get that kind of support, it means they've made a commitment with regard to resource extraction, because that's all it is. Whenever a government takes a position and says our resources are worth so much, and if you're going to buy them, you pay so much, And the first world, America in particular, does not want to pay a lot of money for primary products. So they stabilize governments. They make sure that they overthrow governments. And one tool that is used to overthrow governments is the media.
Well, you are watching our special edition of Press TV's weekly Africa Today program. Today we are taking a glance at some of the events that made headlines in Africa over the past year. We now take a short break, and we still have much more in store for you. So stay with us.
Africa Year in Review 2021.
You're listening to Africa Today. Africa Today is an analytical weekly review of political, economic, and social events in Africa, the world's second largest continent. The series is broadcast every week on Saturdays and Sundays by IRIB English Radio.
Resistance against French forces in West Africa.
Over the past 1 year, there has been rising anger in West Africa over continued French military presence. Now, recently, angry masses in Burkina Faso and Niger temporarily blocked a French military convoy heading to Mali. Here is one of the protesters in Burkina Faso.
France has to leave, together with its weapons. That's it. That's what we want. We don't need the French army. We don't need the French army.
Meanwhile, in an outrageous move, France praised its troops who killed civilians during one of the protests in Niger. Florence Parly, the French defense minister, said on claims that the country's army had carried out an internal investigation into the clashes during when three people lost their lives during one of its convoy patrols in Niger.
West Africans protesting against the presence of French troops accuse this European country of pursuing neo-colonialism in Africa under the pretext of combating terrorism in order to maintain its grip in the region. Now, Mr. Msipa says one of the reasons behind this resistance against French troops in this region is that the masses are now fed up with the plundering of their country's resources by Western countries.
We go back to a history of colonization, of which obviously from the 60s going forward, Africa in general started resisting any form of occupation. And you know that occupation comes attached with the resource extraction. So what the French have been doing is they've now tried to change that colonization and extraction in some sort of assimilation, you know, to make these countries feel like they're part of the empire. But Africans have seen beyond that. They are tired of being used by these countries.
Israeli regime rejected in Africa.
In 2021, the Israeli regime miserably failed in its attempt to join the African Union as an observer member. The African Union Executive Council has delayed a decision on granting the Israeli regime observer status in the Pan-African body until the AU summit in February 2022.
African Union Commission head Moussa Faki Mahamat decided to grant Israel observer status, prompting outrage across the African continent. South Africa is one of the countries that have come out openly to reject Israeli regime's attempt to infiltrate the African Union.
We believe this was not an acceptable decision. We're always worried when there's a rapprochement toward Israel, when there's no effort to build peace and to ensure that the people of Palestine enjoy very basic human rights. If the decision of Mr. Muhammad was based on a fact of an advance in the peace process, South Africa would be fully behind him. But when matters are as they are, when there's occupation, when there are deaths on a regular basis, when there's bombardment of the Palestinian territory, nobody can say this is an acceptable decision.
Decline of U.S. influence in Africa.
United States Secretary of State Antony Blinken visited Africa last November, where he witnessed the decline of his country's influence.
During Blinken's visit to Kenya, Nigeria, and Senegal, there were protests across the world against Washington's interference in Ethiopia. These Ethiopian anti-US demonstrators outside the US Embassy in Pretoria in South Africa are a reflection of the mood across Africa against Washington's imperialism.
America and US friends, stop supporting the terrorist group, and now it's time for Africa to unite and free Africa! Free, free, free!
What is the impact of the diminishing status of the US in Africa?
Well, the traditional way of colonization in Africa was through the use of force, through the use of guns. And that is what Western countries, how they got into Africa. And what they would do is they'll control the governments or install their own leaders in African countries. And because they control these leaders, they're able to extract those resources and pay next to nothing for them. But then what has since happened, since the rise of nationalism in Africa, which, by the way, most of these nationalist parties in Africa have been funded by China. So China helps proper governments to come into authority in Africa. But when they come back, they don't come back using the gun. They come back with diplomacy, economic diplomacy, and offer the African countries assistance by way of loans, by way of infrastructural support, building bridges, and so on. So there is an exchange. Yes, it may not be an equal exchange, but China is coming diplomatically with economic assistance most of these countries. We can talk about what the impact of this of these loans in Africa. That's a different discussion. But they are not coming using force like what America and other countries were doing. They are talking to these leaders and they are offering something in return. Yes, the exchange may not necessarily be fair, but the approach is different. And because of that, we see a rise in Chinese influence in Africa.
France-Algeria tension.
Early October, the frosty relations between France and Algeria took a turn for the worse after Algiers recalled its ambassador to Paris. Now, this decision came following insulting remarks by French President Emmanuel Macron that disparaged the history of Algeria and its state institutions. In an interview with Press TV, the Algerian foreign minister responded to the insulting remarks by Macron.
What was said about Algeria? Algeria had the opportunity to respond to it. We reject any interference in our domestic affairs. We don't accept value judgments on the formation of the Algerian nation. Algerian nation is an old one, deeply rooted in history, a nation that has contributed significantly to the prosperity in the region, in the Mediterranean region, that has cooperated very, very efficiently and substantially with Europe, including France. Algeria has had diplomatic relations with France as well as with a number of other European nations. So we are at ease. All what relates to history, Algeria is a nation like any other nations, and therefore we don't think that it should be subject to any questioning or any debate.
Africa and climate change.
Finally, climate change is now a major issue impacting negatively on millions of people across Africa, yet the continent contributes least to global warming.
During the recent 2021 United Nations Climate Change Conference held in Glasgow, African leaders demanded climate justice. A 26-year-old climate and environmental activist from Kenya, Elizabeth Watuti, addressed the conference and said sub-Saharan Africa is in danger.
I have seen with my own eyes 3 young children crying at the side of a dried up river after walking 12 miles with their mother to find water. Please open your hearts. This is not only happening in Kenya. Over the past few months, there have been deadly heat waves and wildfires in Algeria and devastating floods in Uganda and Nigeria. And there is more still to come. By 2025, in just 4 years' time, half of the world's population will be facing water scarcity. And by the time I'm 50, the climate crisis will have displaced 86 million people in sub-Saharan Africa alone.
The conference concluded with financing commitments falling short of Africa's request.
The monies that were offered or the monies that were committed are negligible. It's not enough. So the African countries, most of them pretty much say, look, you industrialized using the fossil fuels. Now it's our turn to industrialize, and you're telling us to stop burning fossil fuels. That is not fair. So they are saying pretty much if they don't get the money that was committed at COP26 in a bigger, a much bigger sum, then this whole COP26 was just a waste of time. It's simply the West telling the African countries to stop burning fuel while themselves they're industrialized, they're developed, but African countries are still developing. So they have a justification to burn, fossil fuels.
Well, that's it for this week's edition of Africa Today, which focused on some of the events that made headlines in Africa in 2021. Unfortunately, our time is up for today. So drop us a line through our social media handle and let us know your opinion on the subjects we covered over the past year. It was great having you. Goodbye for now, and we wish you all a happy and prosperous 2022.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or BAD 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.com/en. And now, you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.